Morris Micklewhite had a mother named Moira and a cat named Moo. Morris likes Sundays because his mother makes him pancakes on Sundays. Mondays are great too because on Mondays, Morris goes to school. Morris likes a lot of things about school. He likes to paint, he likes to do puzzles, he likes the apple juice at snack time and singing the loudest during circle time. Most of all, Morris likes the dress-up center and the tangerine dress. Morris likes the color of the dress. It reminds him of tigers, the sun, and his mother's hair. He likes the noises the dress makes, swish, swish, swish when it walks, when he walks, and crinkle, crinkle, crinkle when he sits down. He takes turns wearing all the different shoes, but his most favorite ones go click, 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 click across the floor. Sometimes the boys make fun of Morris. Sometimes the girls do too. Morris pretends he can't hear their words over the swish, 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 and crinkle, 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 and click, click, click he makes when he walks. Morris pretends he can't hear the words, but he can. On Monday, Becky tried to pull the dress right off his back. You can't wear that. You're a boy. On Tuesday, Eli, Henry, and the other boys wouldn't let Morris ride on their spaceship unless he took the dress off. Astronauts don't wear dresses. On Wednesday, Bee and Lila noticed Morris's fingernails. His mother had painted them for him the night before. They chased him around the playground, shouted, "Pinky fingers, pinky fingers, pinky fingers." On Thursday, the boys wouldn't let Morris sit near the snack table. "We don't want you to turn us into girls." On Friday, Morris pretended he had a tummy ache. When he thought of all the kids in his class and all the mean things they did and said, his tummy ached for real. His mother let him stay in his bed and read books about elephants. Moo sat in his lap. Moo liked elephants too. On Saturday, Morris's mother brought him some apple juice. He took a sip. She stroked his hair. Moo purred loudly. Morris suddenly felt well enough to do a puzzle. He hummed himself and felt himself feel better still. On Sunday, Morris crawled out from under the covers after a wonderful dream about being on a space safari with Moo. In the dream, they saw big blue elephants and tigers the color of the sun that Morris could hold in the palm of his hand. The elephants swish, swish, swished through as they moved through the grass, and the tigers ate giant leaves that crinkle, crinkle, crinkled as their tiny teeth chewed them. The buttons on the spaceship click, click, clicked under Morris's fingers. Morris wanted to share all the amazing things he had seen in his dream. He took out his brushes and put on his smock and began to paint using every color he could imagine. He showed the painting to his mother when he was done. He pointed out the big blue elephant, the tiny tiger, the color of the sun, the tall grass, and the giant leaves. He pointed out Moo in his shiny round space helmet. "And who's that?" his mother asked, pointing at the little boy in the tangerine dress riding on top of the big blue elephant. Morris was hoping she'd ask. "That's me," he'd said. On Monday, Morris went to school with his painting rolled up in his backpack. When he had the chance, he put on the dress that reminded him of tigers and the sun and his mother's hair. Morris swish swished, the tangerine dress crinkle, crinkle, crinkled, his shoes click, click, clicked. Morris felt wonderful. Eli and Henry wouldn't let him on their spaceship, so Morris built his own. He hung his painting on the front and climbed in, ready to take off. "Are there really elephants in space?" Eli asked. "And tigers?" "If you follow me, we can find out," Morris offered. Eli and Henry followed Morris to a planet they had never visited before. As they explored, Morris swish, swish, swished. The tangerine dress crinkle, crinkle, crinkled. His shoes click, click, clicked. By the time they returned to Earth, Eli and Henry had decided it didn't matter if astronauts wore dresses or not. The best astronauts were the ones who knew where all the good adventures were hiding. Morris smiled. He already knew that. When snack time was over, Becky demanded the dress. Morris told her she couldn't have it. She could have it when he was done with it. "Boys don't wear dresses," Becky snipped. Morris smiled as he swished and crinkled and clicked back to the spaceship. "This boy does." When I read that story, the story of Morris and his tangerine dress as a parent, especially as the parent of a boy, I feel all the things for my child. for this child, for all our children. Because, like most parents, I want my kids to be their full, authentic self. I want them to be loved and accepted by their peers and their community as much as I love my child and all of our children. And Morris's mother is so chill in this book, in a way I'm not sure I could be. This is a very progressive area. Seattle is ranked one of the top 10 best cities on lots of lists for being a queer person or a trans person. But still, a little boy, my little boy, will get teased for wearing nail polish to school, just like Morris, or told that pink is for girls. Gavin knows pink's not for girls. I know a pink-loving guy who teaches kindergarten in Bellevue who says on repeat, there are no girls' colors and boys' colors. There are just colors. And you may be saying to yourself, Pastor Amy, that's great. That's a beautiful story of acceptance and love. But what on earth does it have to do with the story of Joseph? And I'm not sure, I'm sure I'm not alone in having the story of Joseph as one of like the core Sunday school stories, a story that was in all the Bible story books. Growing up, it was just like it was one of the many, stories of Old Testament characters. And this one in particular, like, made all the storybooks because it has this whole story arc from Joseph's childhood all the way to being the, the right hand of the Pharaoh. It's sometimes even called a novella because of that, a biblical novella, because it has all of these different features. So much so that, as I'm sure you all know, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice made it into the musical Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. I'm most familiar with the one from the 90s because I was a teenager when Jason Donovan, who was super popular in Australia and Britain, was the like West End version of that. And when I was a teenager living in Jordan, that was the version that we saw and heard because like British media was what we saw. So that's what was internalized for me. But the thing about that Technicolor dream coat, or the coat of many colors, or the ornamented tunic, or the long robe, all different translations of that particular garment. The dress or the garment was not just any garment, it was actually a dress, and not just any dress, a princess dress. And if that translation is true, it's quite a different way of reading this story than any I heard in VBS or Sunday school. Now, where am I getting this princess dress stuff from? I did wear a colorful robe on purpose today so that I could be. So again, I could,
but I put that together.
yeah,
I put it together.
My orange fingernails. The words translated to many colors, which is what is most like that's what feels most familiar to my brain, the code of colors. In Hebrew, those words are ketonet which is probably not the best Hebrew accent, but ketonet pasim. So in this context, we might read. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he was born when Jacob was old. Israel and Jacob, same person, by the way. Jacob had made for him a ketonet pasim. That phrase in Hebrew is only used in one other place, and conveniently, that other place offers a very clear definition for the words. 1 Samuel 13 reads, Now she had on a ketonet pasim because this is how the virgin daughters of the king were clothed. The she in question is Tamar, the daughter of King David. And that's how the daughters of the king were dressed in ketonet pasim. A very straightforward definition. This is the word, this is the definition of what the clothing is. Jacob is wearing the same kind of clothing as a princess. In other words, what Jacob gave to Joseph was a princess dress. And who knows if it swirled or swished or crinkled like Morris Micplewhite's. So trans and queer interpreters of the Bible have really embraced this story, and some even assert Jacob was trans, or J Joseph was trans. it's possible, I suppose. I don't like to impose modern interpretations of the Bible and of sexuality and gender on the Bible. There's just such two different contexts, cultural contexts. And even with the very clear definition of Ketunat Pasim in 1 Samuel, interpretation and translation is it's tricky, it's uncertain. But what is very, very clear is that Joseph is definitely not just one of the boys in lots of different ways. And he has this in common with his father, Jacob, or Israel. They're used interchangeably in the story. Jacob, the father, was described as a man who lived in tents. The tents were the domain of women. While his twin Esau was out in the field, a hunter, Jacob was described as soft and beautiful. He was the favored younger son of a favorite wife. He was a dreamer. And Joseph matches all of those qualities in his father in every way. In both the Quran and in Jewish tradition, Joseph is called striking and beautiful, and some of the rabbis say he painted his eyes with makeup. And for both Jacob and for Joseph, they're dreamers, and their dreams are gifts through which God speaks to them and through them. As I was researching some of this, I did find an article disputing the princess dress interpretation with the argument that no biblical father would ever get his son a dress. But I wonder if one of the reasons that Joseph was Jacob's favorite was because he saw something in Joseph that was like himself, his youngest boy, a boy who defied the gender norms, who liked girl stuff, whose relationship with his brothers was contentious because of how different he was from them and from what was expected of boys. And Jacob wanted his son to be beautiful, to have something beautiful. Thinking about dads and princess dresses had me searching online for a viral video I remembered from a number of years ago when Frozen was a global phenomenon. So this is when Naomi was 8 or 9, so like 10 years ago already. And I found what I was looking for, and some of you might remember this video too. You see a dad on the screen, sort of shaking his head slowly, and he's sort of like rubbing his face. And the caption above him reads, "My son wanted to go to the cinema dressed as Elsa. I said, there's no way you're doing that alone." And then you see a shot of the dad and the son both dressed as Elsa going into the movie theater. Scott Stewart was the dad in that video, and he has before and since been a champion of kids who express gender in ways that are most true to themselves. He's done this in books and in films and in talks and lots and lots and lots of videos of himself and his son. Oh, at Scott Creates on Instagram and TikToks, if you are interested. And that's an important message, even for cisgender straight kids who are expressive or who are creative or who are outside of the norms, like a kid who just wants to wear nail polish because it's cool and sparkly. Masculinity, especially, is so strictly dictated and policed, even unconsciously. And as I explored Scott Stewart's page a little bit more, rewatching, tearfully rewatching multiple times that Elsa video, I found another post of Scott talking about how the ways that we as parents sometimes talk to our kids about gender expression, saying things like, "Are you sure you want to wear that?" Or, "Maybe you just want to do nail polish at home." And those are the kinds of things we say to kids because we are putting our fears for them on our children, because we want to protect our children. But Scott is saying that stifles those kids' true expression of themselves as much as we want to just say, just tone it down just a little bit. That's kind of what I want to say to Joseph in this story. I'm like, cool, just cool it, buddy. Like, do you have to just like say, you have to talk to the, you have to say the dream? Do you have to wear the dress with your brothers? I want to protect him. I want to warn him Just read the room, my friend. Why draw attention to yourself? When he shares his dream with his brothers, he must know he's just asking for trouble. But in Joseph's family and in his faith tradition, the gift of dreams and interpretations, that is a serious gift from God. Maybe because of his father's experience with dreams, Joseph already knows and his family knows that dreams really do mean something. He knows that he needs to share this part of himself, this gift, even if they don't want to listen or hear it. And like so many non-conforming kids from history and even from the present, Joseph's story leads to violence and trafficking. And even though we don't read about it and didn't read about it this morning, it leads to sexual harassment and prison. The God who created Joseph gave him the gift of dreams. And through all of that part of his story, God is his constant companion. But his relationship with his brothers is completely broken, and he's separated from his father. In the story of Morris Micklewhite and his tangerine dress, it's such a beautiful ending. We see that Morris makes friends with his classmates by the end of the story. After a few days, Morris realizes he can embrace the tangerine dress and that part of himself, and everyone is playing happily. In the story of Joseph, reconciliation and a return to relationship is a matter of decades, of a generation. Decades before his dreams come to pass and his brothers join him in Egypt, crying out for help. Joseph has found success, and his dreaminess has been the gift that has given him access to the palace of the Pharaoh. That gift that wasn't recognized or appreciated by his brothers until they needed his help. And in the final recognition by his brothers, they invoke the name of Joseph's father. The Bible says they approached Joseph and said, "Your father gave orders before he died, telling us, this is what you should say to Joseph. Forgive your brother's sins and misdeeds, for they did terrible things for you. Now, please forgive the sins of the servants of your father's God." And Joseph heard this and he wept with them. Wept with them for the loss of their beloved father. Wept with them for the loss of relationship. Wept with them for the hardship they were experiencing. And wept perhaps with gratitude that now they were reunited. And maybe it was true what the brothers said, that it was Jacob who told them to say all of this. Maybe it was true in spirit. Maybe those brothers were making up those last words of Jacob. What is absolutely true is that Jacob loved and cherished Joseph, that he was grieved when Joseph disappeared from his life. And that Joseph loved and missed that man, that father who had loved him, who had given him a beautiful princess dress, and who understood the importance of dreams. There are so many parents, some right here in this congregation, who are doing it right, including Scott Stewart, who wore the Elsa dress, including Jamie Brusshoff, a Lutheran mom who had a trans daughter who created a renaming ritual in her church, her Lutheran church, and who, along with her daughter Rebecca, has become a fierce trans rights activist. And I mention her specifically because Jamie Brusshoff is going to be at Holy Spirit Lutheran Church in a couple of weeks if you are interested in going to hear her speak. I can share details about that if you're interested. I pray that we parents, that we church community can be as cool as Scott and Jamie and Moira Micklewhite in the story when our kids want to walk outside of the norms and expectations. That our communities and that our churches will also walk with them, and that together we can be community to all of our children. May it be so. minute.